Chasing Dramas. This is the podcast that discusses Chinese culture and history through historical Chinese dramas. We're your hosts, Kathy
and Karen.
Today, we are discussing episode 38 of the Tang Dynasty drama, The Longest Day in Chang'an. If you have any comments or questions, please feel free to reach out to us on Instagram or else email us at karenandkathy@chasingdramas.com. As always, this podcast is in English with proper nouns and certain phrases spoken in Mandarin, and we will reference translations from what is provided online, and we will also provide our own. For this podcast episode, we will start with an episode recap and then move on to history. Today's episode is very flashback heavy. We are still in the 1 a.m.-ish hour, but spend most of this episode seeing how brutal it was for Zhang Xiaojing and his men on the front lines almost a decade ago. In episode 37, Zhang Xiaojing and Yu Chang were duking it out in the giant lantern tower. Wen Ran arrives and sprays some fragrance-type powder over them that basically knocks both of them out. Zhang Xiaojing is fighting for consciousness on the floor, and that results in us seeing this flashback. On Feng Sui Bao, or the Beacon Tower, the soldiers of the Di Ba Tuan, or the 8th Squad, are doing their best to fend off Turkic attackers. Except it's not easy. Men are brutally killed, and the survivors are understandably unnerved. One man, Ding Lao San, cries out that they are all invincible. None of the brothers, 200 of them, of the 8th Squad will die. It is his way of giving himself some more courage in the face of low survival odds. The situation for these soldiers is quite dire. There are dead bodies everywhere with limited food. A fight almost breaks out as the men try to grab what little food is left before a soldier creates some order. At this point, Zhang Xiaojing asks Wen Wuji to continue telling stories about Chang'an. This story helps give these famished and tired men the imagination to dream of something better. In the midst of the story, Zhang Xiaojing runs up to another soldier and gives him a bag of mint. The camera pans to this other soldier's face. He's dirtied and disheveled, but we clearly see that it is Long Bo. Interestingly enough, the drama never has like a label that says this is Long Bo, or as he's known, as Xiao Gui. Apparently, Xiao Gui or Long Bo was a fellow soldier alongside Zhang Xiaojing at Feng Sui Bao. From the conversation, this man is tasked with protecting the squad's flag as an archer of the group. Xiao Gui's weapon of choice is the crossbow, and he is a skilled archer at that. Xiao Gui hasn't slept in days in order to protect this flag. That is his one fixation. And it really might be the one fixation that kept him alive. The two men, Xiao Gui and Zhang Xiaojing, discuss the stories that Wen Wuji is telling about Chang'an. Xiao Gui doesn't believe that the stories are true, but Zhang Xiaojing is willing to believe that they are actual facts. Chang'an, as Zhang Xiaojing highlights, has over a million people in the 108 different Fa'ang. Zhang Xiaojing wonders how amazing the city could be like when just the 200 men of this squad all have exceptional skills. Imagine what a city of 1 million could be like. Zhang Xiaojing says that people always need to have a dream in order to survive. His dream is to go to Chang'an. That is one of the key themes for this episode. What ideals or beliefs do you have? Because it is ideals or beliefs that give people strength to not give up.
The men of the 8th Squad are attacked in the night with many of their men killed. By morning, they are counting the dead. Ding Lao San urges Zhang Xiaojing that they should retreat. If there was any backup, they should have arrived by now. These men have been defending this beacon for 20 days. Ding Lao San argues that it wouldn't look poorly on them if they fell back in order to survive. However, it's that term again, 不退, that we've heard throughout the drama. Wen Wuji is adamant that they do not retreat. The remaining men also cry out that they will not retreat, while Ding Lao San eats all of the food they have left. If you recall, This Ding Lao San we saw for a brief moment as a member of the Shou Zhuolang or mercenary group a couple of episodes ago. He stated then that he cannot be more than a few feet away from food. Part of that was seeing his family die of hunger. And another, I'm assuming, is leftover trauma from not having enough food to eat while on the battlefield, as we see here. Longbo is hugely pissed off at Ding Lao San and orders him to be bait against the attacking Turkic soldiers. Ding Lao San doesn't make much fuss and actually goes solo down to the Turkic camp to bait the men towards the Tang soldiers. They are able to defeat a number of them to live another day, and Ding Lao San survives. Problem is, there is still no food. These men, who have been defending the beacon, are left with little energy following depletion of food. Ding Lao San wants to lead a charge of men home in order to survive, but is met with resistance. They don't want to be labeled as soldiers who abandoned their post. Just as the fight was about to break out, a fellow soldier, Chen Xingfan, returns with a few bags of grain. He apparently went scouting for food and finally returned. The men, overjoyed, cook up some of the grain to survive another day. This Chen Xingfan reassures them that reinforcements are on their way. The group let out a collective sigh of relief. Their efforts are not in vain, and they will hopefully survive to go home. Sadly, this is not the case. One of the soldiers falls into a trap set by the Turkic soldiers and is brutally humiliated, then murdered. The idea was to bait the remaining Tang soldiers to rescue the soldier. Under pressure, this Chen Xingfan can only tearfully explain to the group that there are no reinforcements. He walked for days to many different posts and found no Tang soldiers. They all retreated and left. The 8th squad is on their own with absolutely no reinforcements. The food he brought back was what he scrounged up as leftovers. The Tang army has forsaken them. To make matters worse, there will be about 3,000 Turkic reinforcements that arrive over the next 2 days. 3,000 men against the famished and tired members of the 8th squad. That's it.
The reality is set in for these men. It doesn't look like they're going to survive. Wen Wuji explains to the group that in Chang'an, the Lantern Festival is the busiest night of the year. People will write names of fallen soldiers on lanterns in order to remember them. But who will remember that this battle occurred? However, that is what he wants, to fight the battle on the border so that his family does not have to fight the battle at home. After hearing these words and thinking it through, in a surprising twist, Ding Lao San orders for Chen Xingfan to take a young injured soldier home. He wants these soldiers to escape, while Ding Lao San remains here. The person who wanted to leave the entire episode now has decided that he is a soldier, something or a phrase that Zhang Xiaojing has been repeating this entire drama. 我是个兵 means that I am a soldier. Ding Lao San says that he will protect others. He will not have others protect him. The episode ends with us seeing Zhang Xiaojing in Chang'an talking to Wen Zhan. Evidently, he made it to Chang'an, protecting the family members he strived to do on those brutal days along the border. This episode was quite intense and very brutal, but we do get a glimpse of how awful things were for Zhang Xiaojing and his men. The question then becomes, why did Xiao Gui or Longbo end up as our main antagonist today when he seemed to have been very close brothers with Zhang Xiaojing on this tower? Xiao Gui or Longbo also seems very focused on protecting the flag, which they all know to mean as representing their homeland, their people. And Xiao Gui never once gave up his post. So for him to turn around and start attacking Zhang Xiaojing and the people of Chang'an instead, whereas they were focused on protecting the people of Chang'an throughout this episode, is quite a change. We are seeing why, though, there should be or could be this shift, seeing that all the Tang soldiers basically left these soldiers out to dry and to die. That is not a good look, and basically anyone in Zhang Xiaojing's position would be disheartened by the fact that their superiors just basically gave up their lives.
This episode, I personally thought, was beautifully shot, and I kind of view it as a mini movie or an origin story for the characters of Zhang Xiaojing and Long Bo, or as we see here, Xiao Gui.
This is one of those instances, again, where we see that this drama is actually focused on showing us the brutalities of war rather than having a beautiful cast on screen. None of these men look pretty. They're grungy. They're gruff. They're dirtied. But you do get a sense of how hard it was for them to survive on the battlefield over these past couple of days.
And while with that, let's turn to history. This was, as we mentioned, a background-heavy episode, but we do have two topics to cover. The first is a gentleman named Yu Wenkai. Zhang Xiaojing mentions his name as the man who built Chang'an. So, who was he? Yu Wenkai was born in 555 and was a member of the pretty famous Yu Wen clan of Xianbei origin. The Xianbei people were an ancient nomadic group in which members settled in parts of modern-day China and integrated into the Han culture. Yu Wenkai came from a military family, but he chose instead to focus on the arts, and more importantly, architecture. In 581, Yang Jian seized the throne and established the Sui dynasty, making him Sui Wendi. Yang Jian purged the old royal family of Yu Wen, who ruled northern Zhou, but Yu Wenkai's family wasn't from the same branch, and thus spared from this purge. The capital of the Sui dynasty was established at the then Chang'an, but at the time of 581, the city itself was already 800 years old, and it was too small for its current population and, frankly, falling apart. The emperor, Yang Jian, thus decided to build a new capital city to the southeast of the old Chang'an on the mountain of Longshou. The emperor tasked members of his court to build a grand new capital city.
Yu Wenkai served as the main architect of this city, providing the basis for the construction to begin. This new city was not called Chang'an, but instead Da Xing Cheng, because the emperor was known as the Da Xing Jun Gong, or the Da Xing Duke of the second rank. The name didn't change to Chang'an until the Tang Dynasty. The city was first completed in 583, but there was a lack of water. The emperor ordered a canal to be built from the river Wei Shui all the way to the Yellow River. Yu Wenkai led the efforts to build the canal, a distance of almost 300 kilometers, and was then known as Guangtongqu. In 586, Yu Wenkai's brother mounted an insurrection but was captured and killed. Yu Wenkai was also banished for a number of years due to his brother's actions. In 602 AD, he regained favor with the emperor. After building Ren Shou Gong and the mausoleum for Empress Du Gu,
in 604, the now Emperor Yang Guang wanted to build an eastern capital, or Dongjing, to maintain control over regions closer to the east, such as Hebei and Shandong regions. The emperor set his sights on the city of Luoyang and had Yu Wenkai build the plans to also build a splendid new city near the old city of Luoyang. So when we talk about the cities that were built, it wasn't that they were built separate from the existing cities, but they were built kind of at a side of the existing cities or on top of the existing city. Yu Wenkai died at the age of 57 in 612. He was known for his contributions of architecting the two major cities of the Sui and Tang eras, as we just mentioned, Daxingcheng or Chang'an, and Dongjing or Luoyang. His designs for the city and the canals were the basis that allowed for these two cities to grow into the splendors that lasted for another 400 years.
Outside of Chang'an, let's talk about crossbows. We've always seen Zhang Xiaojing with his crossbow, but we see in this episode that he was a valued member with his troops because of his skill with this weapon. Let's talk a little bit about crossbow archers in the context of Chinese history and the Tang Dynasty. Fun fact, China was the first civilization to actually invent crossbows. Some put the date around the 7th century BC. The weapon had always been used across millennia, but by the time we got to the Tang Dynasty, bows were favored more than crossbows. Due to the empire's influence from nomadic tribes, the Tang Dynasty, or Tang military, placed heavy emphasis on bows. Crossbows took time to reload, which meant that you could only have two good shots before a cavalry unit was able to charge through. According to one historical text, one army had 12,500 bows, but only 2,500 crossbows. Bows were much more ubiquitous, and the Tang government had strict rules on who could use crossbows. They definitely weren't allowed for personal use, but bows were. Throughout the drama, we also see bows used by many more soldiers than crossbows. So it is a little interesting that Xiao Gui, or Longbo, and Zhang Xiaojing used crossbows in this drama.
We've talked about other weapons such as the Mo Dao as well, and those all took precedence over the crossbow. During the Kaiyuan era, or when Zhang Xiaojing was in the army, the imperial army had 7 types of crossbows, and we do have historical archives to note these. We had the Bo Zhang Nu, we had the Jiao Gong Nu, the Mu Shan Nu, the Da Mu Shan Nu, Zhu Gan Nu, the Da Zhu Gan Nu, and Fu Yuan Nu. The problem is you're just going to have to take my word for what these crossbows are, because there are very little pictorial evidence of what they look like. So I'm not even going to try to translate that into English. Let's just say that out of the 7, only 2 were for individual use. The Bo Zhang Nu, which was used by the infantry, and the Jiao Gong Nu, which was used by the cavalry. The others were probably manned by multiple people, as we see in the drama, for example, some people using their feet for some of the crossbows instead. Throughout the drama, Zhang Xiaojing has his own personal crossbow that definitely wasn't military authorized. I was spending some time reading analyses online, and basically the consensus is that there was no way his crossbow in the drama was able to have that much quote-unquote firepower to kill people at the range as he did.
Also, there was an interview with the author of the book saying that the director basically looked at all of these archival sketches of the crossbow and told him, the author, that there's no way Zhang Xiaojing's crossbow could reload as quickly as possible. And the author basically said, yeah, I kind of went crazy, went ham writing this like super powerful Zhang Xiaojing. That is one piece of military weapon that he did not actually have too much reference for from a historical perspective. So this part of the drama was kind of made up.
But hey, this is all for dramatic purposes. And I think the drama did an excellent job mixing the crossbow in with all the other weapons. I mean, we're basically going Assassin's Creed here with Zhang Xiaojing parkouring everywhere. So, you know what? If we needed to suspend our disbelief for a couple of things, parkour is one of them, and then this crossbow I will accept as another. To close out on crossbows, though, during the Song Dynasty, the Song Empire was severely lacking in its cavalry because, well, it had pretty powerful neighbors to the north. Hence why it had to further innovate on its crossbows against the nomadic tribes. During that time, crossbow archers comprised of more than 50% of the Song armies, compared or contrast to the 25% during the Tang Dynasty and sometimes down to even 10% during the Tang era.
And that closes out our discussion of episode 38 of The Longest Day in Chang'an, a very gruesome but also touching and thought-provoking episode. Friendly reminder that if you are looking for sites to watch Chinese dramas and you are in the US, head on over to our sponsor, JUBAO TV. I would also just highlight that Three Body, the Chinese version, Santi, is on Peacock for you to watch with English subtitles. That has got to be very interesting when you compare the Netflix version that my coworkers are even all talking about right now, the Western American Netflix version versus the Chinese version. We'll leave you to think about which one you prefer. In any case, thank you all so much for listening. Be sure to check out our website for all the new drama reviews that I've been posting. Thank you so much, and we will catch you in the next podcast episode.